Hello and welcome to the Fast Break Podcast. This is Amon Kidwai. I'm joined by Dan Madigan and Patrick Martin. The Fast Break Podcast is a production of the Fast Break Newsletter, which you can also now find on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Be sure to find us, like and subscribe, rate and review us, only if you're going to give us a good review, though. Someone who we are getting really good reviews from is Terrace Reed Jr., forward from Michigan, who has quickly made the decision to join the UConn Huskies this offseason. He visited this past weekend for the national championship parade. Very strong flex, by the way, to offer that on your visit. Yeah. Hey, come through for the national championship parade. And then ends up announcing his commitment on Wednesday. Reed is a 6'10" forward from Michigan, as we said. Folks, how are we feeling about the addition of Reed, what he brings to the front court? We know Klingon's gone next year. Seems like a solid pickup.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I just looked at what Reed did at face value with 9 points and 7.2 rebounds per game. I wasn't necessarily blown away. Kind of felt like I was missing something at what made Reed become the first target for this team, for Hurley and the rest of the coaching staff after the national championship in the transfer portal. And as I started digging around, I wrote the article over at the blog. It was a little bit easier to kind of see what the picture is with Reed and what his deal is. 1.4 blocks per game. He was top 10 in KenPom in offensive rebound percentage, defensive rebound percentage, and block percentage. And just from some highlights that I've seen, I'm not super familiar with his game at this time, but some really good footwork, a lot of explosiveness, kind of like a, you know, I wouldn't say the footwork is at Adama Sanogo's level, because I think there's only a few people that can really do that, but similar kind of post-game, low post oriented skill set, and really explosive, can get up and down on a dime. Kind of pogo sticky, but stocky as well. It definitely a beefier kind of big man option compared to Samson Johnson. And I think it's going to allow UConn to do something similar, albeit with probably a little bit less talent than to what they did this year. You know, Klingon was kind of that more traditional back to the basket big man. He could set those screens, roll to the rim off the bench, an elite shot blocker. And then Samson Johnson was instant offense and able to be, you know, a real burst of athleticism when Klingon was in foul trouble. Klingon had, you know, had to take a break or get on the bench for any other reason. So I think this will kind of allow them to continue to do that. It's going to be a different look, but pretty impressive skill set that I think that Reed has. And it's a good get for the Huskies, especially for the first one in the portal.
I think we said in part one, or the last podcast, whatever you want to call it, how UConn's offense is always really doing stuff. Like, Dan Hurley's always doing stuff. And this is another example of, like, you know, Hurley was out there essentially portaling during the parade, which needs to get mentioned here. There were no days off, and this reeks of a UConn style move that Hurley and the coaching staff has executed in the last couple of years, where he's not necessarily the best player on the market. He's ranked 36th in the Athletic's like top transfer rankings, and that's strictly going off of talent. But as far as like fit for what the program needs, he's perfect, because like if you combine Samson Johnson and Terrace Reed together, you have like the best center in college basketball. Because Samson's weaknesses, I think he had a 11% defensive rebounding rate, like something not great. He was a backup, you know, no disrespect, and inability to, you know, not really put the ball on the floor or, you know, create anything on his own. That's what Terrace Reed can do. And he did it on a dumpster fire of a Michigan team. Our dumpster fire isn't an insult to dumpster fires, how much of a mess that program was. And you almost have to think that the staff looked at that like, guys, no one's going to want this kid because Michigan was so bad. But like, you know, in the tape in Madigan, I think you tweeted this, the tape pops for him with how, you know, his face up game, his quick first step, his finishing around the rim, you see so much Sonogo in that. And so if you just say this is a rough around the edges Sonogo that has an entire summer to get in with the right program, figure out his defense, you know, he has all the tools, and he, you know, they weren't, you know, refining those tools at Michigan. You get him under this coaching staff, and he's going to be an absolute weapon, and not necessarily like a starter or like, I think it's going to be more of a platoon type situation, like a 20 and 20 type split, because what Samson and Terrace do will kind of be dependent on game flow and everything. Maybe Samson starts and then Terrace plays most of the minutes. I have a lot more to say about Samson though later. And I think, like, it's such a Hurley move to grab a guy like this that people in 9 months are going to be like, where did this guy come from? And he's an absolute beast. And then the cherry on top, 2 years. They got him for 2 years. He's not a grad transfer rental that, you know, is ring chasing. And so now you open up the window of, like, what is this team going to look like when he has a whole year in the system in 25 and 26? I know that's like super, super far projecting down, but it's hard not to think about, like, you already have a piece in place for, like, the, you know, beyond next year.
Hey, yeah, not that there's anything wrong with being a grad transfer rental that's chasing rings. We certainly appreciate that contribution as well, should it arrive. But yeah, I think that's such a good point about the development. You could argue that he'd probably have better numbers on a more in a more real coaching and basketball team situation. And just like you said, I mean, he's got the potential to be a immediate contributor in kind of like a 1B or key backup kind of role this year, but then also to be in a really, you know, strong position to be a great contributor the following year, which I think is great. And yeah, I mean, I think in terms of Hurley's decision to pursue him, it's also, you got to manage the Samson Johnson of it all, right? You don't want to bring in someone over him in this exact situation. So I think it's a good level of a person that he found to make sure to push Samson, but also it's not someone who's like automatically above him. And then I would just say, in terms of comps, I saw John Rothstein say Alex Oriaki, and I kind of agreed with that. You know, I think that's a solid, you know,
I can get down with that.
Yeah, some solid parallels there. He's a strong guy. And I think that's, you know, a good element to bring to the front court, you know, to say the least. And just really strong first add here with other interesting targets as well, very much in play.
Yeah, I feel like we really just gave Dan Hurley's recruiting pitch to Terrace Reed Jr. We kind of just talked through it. I feel like the easiest sell that Hurley could make is look at Samson Johnson. Samson Johnson came through. He's been with the program for a few years, dealt with injuries. This year, carved his role as Donovan Clingan's backup, and other than fouling out in the national championship game, was a huge impact player throughout the entire NCAA tournament. And now he's kind of set up to be, you know, not the guy, but the starting big man for one of the top 10, 15 teams in the country, probably. So I feel like that's a pretty easy sell where you tell Terrace Reed, look, come in, back up Samson Johnson. Some games you'll play 30 minutes, some games you might play 10 or 12. And next year, your senior year, you're going to be the guy. The NBA draft is going to love you. You're going to get notice from scouts. It's going to be kind of, you're going to be the next big man after Sonogo, after Klingon, after Johnson. So I feel like it's just an easy sell. And we've seen what Kamani Young has done to, and I believe Tom Moore works on the bigs too, but we've seen what they've done to develop all the big men in the last few years. And if you're someone with his size and his explosiveness, I really love the Oriaki comp, but I do think Reed looks a little more explosive and athletic. But if you're someone of that caliber and that raw talent, I feel like it's a no-brainer to come to a school like UConn and see what they can unlock.
And I'm so comfortable with how he fits with everything. And it's important to not fall into the portal trap of every big flashy name that comes out Oh, want him, need him, got to have him on the team. When Malik Mack from Harvard decommitted, everyone's like, oh, we, go get, Husky, he's friends with someone on the team. I forget who. No, he's a 6'1 guard. You're not having a 6'1 Malik Mack than with Ahmad Noel, who is barely 6 feet tall. Like, you have to think fit for this. And we're not Kentucky. We're not schools like Arkansas that just kind of like grab whatever transfer, and whether it be hubris or just ignorance, assume coaching will iron out all the wrinkles. The staff goes out with, I think, a very specific grocery list. And this is an exact, like, okay, we need some size, some rebounding size, and a guy that can, basically create some gravity in the middle for space. Because for all of Samson's abilities that he flashed in his junior year, he was not like a guy who can create his own shot. So when he was out there, the spacing had to be perfect because no one was really kind of watching him except for the vertical lob threat. Now there's going to be different looks that UConn can give, because I think you can give the ball to Reed on the elbow and with enough spacing, just say, like, go attack the rim and create. And how that was the Adama Sanogo special, his final 2 years. And this guy, he's not like some, he was a top 40 recruit that was, essentially wasted at Michigan. So, like, when you look at, as far as like pedigree, they found a dude who has all of the ability, that had flown under the radar. So, like, thank you, Juwan Howard. You know, this is going to be, it's so very obvious that, like, in 9 months, we're going to be like, man, remember when everyone thought like all these transfers were better than Terrace Reed?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think the state of UConn is at that San Antonio Spurs, level of things where it's like if they want you, that is such a good sign for you as a player. It's the Michael Scott, I'm so impressed with all the potential you see in me, line. It's you got to trust that they vetted him on their parameters of what they look for, the same things they saw in guys like Cam Spencer and Haas, and Tristan Newton, of just like ultra competitive guys who can bring it. Obviously not the same type of player, but just attitudinally. And so I think if he fit that, and I think the other thing is he still was going to be a coveted recruit. Like, other schools were interested, but he made his commitment just shortly after completing the visit. So obviously, like, decided to say, hey, this is better than even the possibility of what I'm expecting to see at other schools, which is another good sign for kind of the closing ability of the staff on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, I think Georgetown and Providence were some of the Big East schools in on him. And there were some other big names like Oregon, Kansas State, and Arkansas as well. But I kind of feel like Hurley made sure that he wanted to have a great impression with Reed. And I think having him take his visit on the weekend of the championship parade is like 1,000,000% not an accident. Like, I feel like you go all in with that, you let it happen, especially with NIL. Based on what we've heard, it seems like people are really open to taking as many visits as possible, seeing what their options are, both playing time wise, NIL wise, everything that goes into it. And Hurley said, how about no? How about I just take you to the national championship parade, which, by the way, we won it last year as well. It's the second one. Hartford's a madhouse. He's a king of Connecticut. This could be your life. This could be you a year from now if you come here and get in on this. And I feel like that is such an easy sell, especially after all the stuff that he's been through with that god-awful Michigan team this season. So it's smart. I think they could have held that visit for other recruits, or they could have brought more people in, but it seems like Reed was the only one there and he was the main target, and they closed and they got their guy.
Hey, we all know what happened the last time UConn picked up a guy with pretty good stats in a mediocre mid-major conference. All-American Tristan Newton.
There we go. And hey, by the way, yeah, like, hey, come through, stroll with us through the parade as we casually walk through it as if we've been there before, because we have. Great,
Many,
great
many
time.
times, in fact. And the other point I want to—I think it's time to talk Samson Johnson, because you made the point, Amon, saying like you trust the staff to communicate to him, saying like, "Hey, this guy's not going to replace you. You're not on any kind of notice here. Here's what you need to do to get better. This guy's going to help that process." And that was Samson Johnson's first real college basketball action. We're not going to see that type of Samson Johnson next year. He is going to be better. Like, think of how Hassan Diarra looked at after year two. He tripled his points, career highs in rebounds, assists, the lowest amount of turnovers. His shooting percentage went up to 35%. I'm not saying Samson Johnson is going to come in and start raining threes next year, although, God, that would be so sick. No, but like, all, you know, the edges to his game, as far as like rebounding, a little overreactive fouls, he now has all this film that the coaching staff is going to work with him in the summer, and the green light from the staff to say like, "Hey, you're our guy." It's not like, "Oh, well, you have to battle with Terrace and, you know, whoever wins, you're going to back them up." I truly see this as a like a 2020 platoon where the two can work together and like work out together, and next thing you know, you have this kind of dynamic going where like it felt a lot of, you know, it could feel a lot like the Sanogo and Klingon, with, you know, Sanogo just eats you up inside, and then Klingon is the was the vertical threat, as he mostly was as a freshman. So banking on like an improved Samson Johnson plus the raw abilities of Reed, you're set in the front court. And then, you know, can't forget about Youssef Sangare. Like, if he has any type of ability to take the next step, you know, another foul trouble guy that you can bring in there and possibly shore up. So in one fell swoop, you went and completely set your front court. And the backcourt stuff is looking kind of tasty too, if we're ready to get to that.
Yes, absolutely. So, in terms of other targets, which again, the closing speed of this most recent one has got you just absolutely interested in anyone that we hear is on the radar or making a visit. And so, along those lines, who is making a visit, but probably the highest rated recruit to ever visit UConn in recent memory in Liam McNeely, a top five recruit, Indiana decommit. Five star from Monteverde Academy. He's a 6'7" wing, visiting on Monday and Tuesday of next week. I think that would be just like, you know, it, aside from what it would bring to the team next year, you know, just a massive pickup. But that's a huge, huge visit coming up. And then there's a few other guys in the transfer portal, I think, that are on the radar too. But first, you know, thoughts on McNeely making a visit and what that might bring.
Well, first of all, Aman, will you apologize to Steph Castle, because he is the highest rated recruit?
But when he committed, he was not. That was kind of
Okay. Nope.
my
Also,
comment
okay.
there.
Cooper
Yes.
Flagg was on campus. Like, we can't just, maybe we have to bleep out Cooper Flagg, but like, he's really good.
I've never heard of him, actually. I don't know who that is. So, but yeah, I'm sorry. I guess Cooper Flagg visited. So we'll have to edit that, but I guess I completely blacked out the fact that he made like a little that whole thing. So, one of the highest rated commitment players
Okay.
to ever visit
Okay.
UConn.
We're back
It
on track.
doesn't matter, but yeah, it's still a very, very high profile potential ad there.
No, I mean, he is I'm going to be transparent about what we were talking about in the Slack today. I don't watch film on a recruit, like a high school kid, until he commits to UConn. Now, I make the exception for like transfers or people who are already in college, 'cause that's actual tape. You can kind of connect the dots on that, but there is so much that you can't figure out from a high school video. Guys, Donovan Klingon's video, it's just
Wow.
like,
Special
I
case.
know that's a special case, but I try not to watch a lot of those highlights. I cheated a little bit today. Like, there was an autoplay on Liam McNeely that popped up, and it was right after I had told you, Aman. I was like, "Yeah, I don't watch that. I don't wait till that." And I'm like, "Oh, I like." Just kind of kept it on
You
there
have
for
to.
30 seconds, and God, I mean, 30 seconds to describe a recruit. This is gonna go great. But like the size and versatility and shooting that he brings reminds you of like a cross. And again, I'm only using these as a recency bias, but like a cross between a Cam Spencer and an Alex Caravan, of like the craftiness of Cam Spencer with the size, because he's 6'8", 6'9", with the size of Alex Caravan, and the shooting ability probably a mix of the two. I'm not saying that's going to be who he is, but he has the type to be the type of he's the type of instant impact freshman that we came to enjoy with Steph Castle. And he won't I see him less as like an Andre Jackson or a Jordan Hawkins, who are like studs that needed a year of seasoning. He's a dude that you would throw out there and just say, like, make a connective play. Is he going to be your number one stopper and top five pick next year? No, but I do see him having like a Reed Sheppard like impact over at UK, where like the minute he steps on the court, it's like, why is that dude on the bench? Like, get him in there. And anytime you can grab that in early April or mid-April, chef's kiss. And what I like about that is he's rumored to visit what next week. This is a dude who decommitted from Indiana. He just wants to get on a college campus. I love the fact that UConn is first in line here. You have to imagine that Hurley's going to drop whatever type of, clout thing that he can on that and say, like, look, mate, like, I've sorry, I want to go meet the president. I got a busy schedule right now. I'm on with JJ Redick, and I just talked with, like the, I don't know, whoever,
Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham, like, whatever kind of name you want to drop out there. And you have to hope that because if you lock McNeely up, the rest of the summer is just gravy. Maybe you go out and get another shooter. I'm not even sold on another shooter at that point, because I trust the development that Solo Ball, Jaden Ross, Jalen Stewart will have from year one to year two. If you go out and grab somebody, great. I prefer him to be like a multi-year guy, so you can get him into the system and get his roots down and get him going. But like you said, we've done pretty well with rentals as well. And but I think McNeely is like the it's the one it's the number two of the 1-2 punch with Reed and McNeely. If you bring those guys in, you are reloading.
Yeah, I feel like getting a guy like McNeely would be an incredible get. I feel like UConn has been rumored on him from basically the minute he decommitted from Indiana, which I think is something that I can't really remember happening with any high-profile recruit, let alone one that's decommitted this kind of late in the cycle. He's widely regarded as one of the best shooters in the class. He's a better shooter than Cooper Flagg, who UConn was obviously targeting before. That's something that I think makes him a better fit in this offense overall. Obviously, if Flagg came, things would change to kind of work around him because he's still a special player. But I'm looking at Adam Finkelstein's scouting report of him, and it just says one of the best combinations of skill and basketball acumen in the national class. That literally screams like I'm going to play for Dan Hurley and do, insane numbers as a freshman on offense. That's what I get. And I think if you're someone who has a high basketball IQ, has a lot of respect for the game, seems like McNeely does, I don't think there's a better landing spot than the back-to-back champs. It looks like Kansas is in the mix. I feel like the Kansas and UConn rivalry is like kind of forming on and off the recruiting trail now. Obviously, there was the Timberlake stuff last year, really close game at the Fog. This past season as well, and now they're duking it out for a bunch of, actual recruits and transfers. So, no matter where McNeely goes, I hope that some bad blood, some rivalry with Kansas kind of pops out of all this, because it seems like Hurley and Bill Self are just trading blows on the recruiting trail for all the top guys now, and it's pretty cool to see.
I know Kansas has brought in a ton of like big mids, combo guard shooters as well, which I thought had like kind of put them out of the sweepstakes. But again, it's Bill Self. He will throw money at the highest ranked recruit he sees, and hopes he comes and figures it out later. That's why you see all these like five-star dudes transfer after playing 10 minutes a game, and then they go play everywhere else. Yeah, whatever. I'm not going to get deep into the whole recruiting ethos there, but let's not forget, like, as much as we like the tape on McNeely, we love the tape on Timberlake last year, and were heartbroken when, not heartbroken, but bummed when he went to Kansas, and then along comes Cam Spencer. So if along comes a Kobe Brea type from Dayton, then the staff will make it work. And the portal closes, I think, at the end of the month, correct? So there's still a lot of time. There's a lot of players that could shake loose that UConn might have their eye on. And if it doesn't work out with McNeely, I'm sure Bria will provide the same type of like size and shooting, really kind of like what is UConn needs going forward. And like a little size shooting and savvy ball handling, I guess.
And the other thing, oh, go ahead.
I do feel like Bria, I don't want to say he's a consolation prize because I also think there's a chance they honestly could go and get both. But I feel like he is kind of in a similar mold, and maybe it's something where they want to go with a more proven guy anyways. Just at the college level and someone where McNeely may be getting courted by some of the other, elite programs at this level. But Breo was 49.8% from three last year on over 200 attempts. He's 6 foot six.
Oh, he's a sniper.
Yeah, I mean, career 43% shooter. These are insane numbers.
Come
And
on down, buddy.
it's the A10 is no joke. Like this is a very legitimate basketball conference. These are not Fugazi mid-major numbers. Like the A10 is legit. 6'6" will play just about anywhere. Not sure how he is defensively, but I feel like Hurley had a lot of success and really liked having huge guards. And I feel like if defense is the only issue, we saw it with Cam Spencer at the beginning of the year, right? I feel like the coaching staff has kind of earned the benefit of the doubt to try and unlock something out of these guys that may be a little rough around the edges defensively and turn them into something serviceable and get 20 to 35 minutes out of them every night.
Yeah, if you're not a great defender as far as attributes or effort, one, they're going to clean up the effort in 2 seconds, and two, they'll make them into a solid positional defender, which the whole my whole I regret almost talking about like foot speed so much all last season of like, oh, like I don't know, man, Cam Spencer can get burned one on one, and he can really get exposed. No one gives a shit about that. He everything else was so sound that it was just like a blip on the radar. And that's what I think it could be with Kobe Brea. And you mentioned this in the Slack, Dan. If they do somehow get McNeely and Brea and are able to keep the current freshmen, rising sophomores together, that is scary. I hate to say it, that's scary time. Like you might even have to start talking three-peat at that point because there are not a lot of weak. The only weaknesses with that team right there is a little bit of experience and time to gel because you have ball handling, you have shot making, you have size on the perimeter, you have positional flexibility, you have inside out balance, you have floor spacing, you have the defensive intensity instilled by the coaching staff. And as far as like, losing everything that they lost to come back with those three guys potentially, it's almost like you don't want to get too far. You don't want to put the cart before the horse there because that horse is pretty strong.
Even two of those guys is still very, very solid, I feel like. And I think I feel like it's pretty attainable. But one of them is already here. Reed is already locked up. And I think they're certainly in the mix for Brea and McNeely. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, it could get really, really interesting really fast, depending on how the portal shakes out.
And I think what's going to determine, obviously, the needs list there is what level of returning players we do end up seeing. So I think we've already had Donovan Clingan make his declaration for the NBA draft. I think we can safely say that we expect Steph Castle to do so, even though as of this recording Wednesday evening, he has not yet announced. I think we can say that Klingon and Castle are as good as gone. We can talk about their prospects a little bit later, but Hassan Diarra, we have indications that he's returning from multiple reports. And I think one of the really interesting situations as it relates to retention, as well as the potential for next year's team to be also really good, is Alex Caravan. He's someone who, if you had asked me during the season, I was going to say, I think Caravan's gone. I think he's proven enough. He's a good enough. He's got the tools. He's a smart, mature player. He's old for a sophomore. So I kind of figured he was gone, even though he was kind of straddling that second round, first round status. He wasn't really breaking into the first round there. That's still where he is right now. I think if he was to go, this is my prediction, something I've said before. I think if Caravan, goes through the process will be kind to him. I think there will be an NBA scout somewhere that will find him and say, oh, I like this guy. And, I'm picking 28th or something, or I'm picking 35th, like Andre Jackson style. And, maybe we will take him. But recently I have allowed the possibility of him returning to gain some steam. He would be getting his degree. He would get a larger role to prove that he can kind of do it as the man, in a way that he did not this past year, which is a different, significant thing to be able to kind of prove. So yeah, he'd get more usage, he'd get his degree, and he'd have the opportunity to go for the three-peat, and it might be a very, uniquely built team around his talents that will help him shine as much as possible, which, could also be good, and he'd get a fairly sizable NIL bag. So I think Caravan's decision is a very, very interesting one here. I honestly felt he was as good as gone, but I have softened from that position. No inside info there, but how are you guys feeling about the Caravan potential decision here?
I remember Tristan Newton said something, I think it was earlier this year, how like his first year, 20 or 22, 23, he said, he was like, yeah, I was like the fifth guy on the offense. So like, I was just really setting up shots for Sanogo and Jordan Hawkins and everybody. And I kind of got mine when I could. And then this year was like, okay, we're going to start running stuff or clearing the court out and saying, go to get to the hole. I can see that same type of thing for Caravan being like, yeah, man, like I had to hit a couple open shots and cut when I had to. Now I have people like, setting screens for me. I have to make a decision off of pick and roll, or they're going to put me out into space and let me break down a taller defender that's not as fast. I think we see like the example that I'll put is that like Jordan Hawkins and Andre Jackson as freshmen didn't have like plays designed for them. Then they took the next step, and all of a sudden you started to see them coming around curls and screens and doing a lot of that action. And the same way that like Jalen Stewart didn't have a lot of plays drawn for him. Okay, well, we're going to start drawing up plays for Jalen Stewart. We're going to start. And that's the same light that I view Caravan of like now he's going to get a chance to create his own offense, put the ball in his hands and say, make a decision. He was kind of like the end product on so many, whether it be like a three or just like a cut and boom, that now the ball is going to be in his hands more. His usage rate will climb and he's a fast processor. He can figure out a defense, and that's going to, with the weapons around him, which seem to be either, big shooting or athleticism down low, Caravan can work with that. So I think they are, like you said, tailoring this potential offense and defense around him for coming back. And I can see him having the type of year, like the all conference, potentially all American year, and he's more solid in the first round in the next year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, Patrick. I was rewatching the national championship game this past week, and I was just so blown away by how good Alec Caravan looked on the second watch, where during the flow of the game, a lot of the stuff that he was doing, those cuts, those elite, fast closeouts, those hard hedges, those contested threes or the blocked threes that he had, didn't really process in the heat of the moment. And I think it just kind of speaks to his season. I think he was really good all year long, but I think as UConn marched through the tournament and guys like Kim Spencer and Steph Castle took their game to another level, he kind of got overshadowed, and not in a bad way. I just think what Castle and Spencer did was just in, and Newton really was just incredible. And Caravan was just kind of doing his steady thing, doing 10 or 12 points, cutting to the hoop for easy buckets, shutting down guys in the post, guarding smaller, quicker defenders with a lot of ease. And it just kind of got lost in the shuffle of everything during this title run, which is a shame. But I think if you're Alex Caravan, you have to declare for the NBA draft and get that evaluation. I think that's almost non-negotiable. I'm sure he knows that. I'm sure Hurley has told him as such too. But it only takes one team to fall in love with you. And if he walks out of there with some sort of confirmation that a team will take him towards the end of the first round, I think it's really hard to pass up. And I think it's something that he has to consider, even with all the stuff that you just laid out there, Patrick, laying out in front of him last next year. But on the other side, he enrolled early. He's been here a semester early. We know through some of the stuff that's been out about him through articles, through some of the social media stuff, he is really committed to his academics. If he is back for 1 year, he'd probably be able to graduate with at least his undergraduate degree, either after the fall semester or at the end of the spring. And maybe that's something that he values, along with the opportunity to be the guy, show his stuff, show that he can do all the things that he did in bits and pieces throughout this past season, and elevate his draft stock. So I feel like he could still be a first round NBA talent next year. Based on my limited NBA draft knowledge, I believe next year's class is going to be a little bit deeper, a little bit stronger. So that might be tough, but I don't think he could really hurt his stock if he comes back. But if someone says they're going to take you in the first round, you got to take the money and run.
He also has hashtag unfinished business. He was not named an academic All-American, and Cam Spencer was. You know he's getting into the library and working a mental sweat there to get that honor. I mean, that's the last accolade that he needs before he goes pro. But in
Cam's
all
just padding his stats there. Cam's taking this like nonprofit online master's. Alex Caravan's taking computer science stats. He's doing some very serious stuff here.
Well,
It's like
you know Cam Spencer is also chirping the ever-loving shit out of him for that, of like, hey man, you couldn't get an academic All-American? It was easy. I was here for 1 year and got it. You couldn't do that? But no, okay. So we had this. We had a pod after the Empire Classic when you kind of just beat Texas. And Amon, you sat there and you're like, guys, I've seen enough. I'm ready to put my stamp on Alex Caravan as an NBA player, because he had just put up 20 points on 8 of 14 shooting, 4 of 8 from 3, in two just absolutely sick, like back you down, turn around, like fadeaway shots of like creating your own offense. And that was a game when Klingon was under the weather. Texas went super small. It was a big Samson Johnson breakout. And it was at that time we weren't sure who was going to be the guy. And we talked here saying like, man, I guess it's Caravan. I guess he's going to be the dude. That didn't turn out because, God, this team, like Madigan said, this team was just so damn stacked. It was a different person every night. And Caravan being the consummate pro teammate, just kind of was like, all right, whatever you need, I'm ready to step in and do it. He didn't have to be that guy that much anymore. And so, yeah, like it's a really shitty draft, which I'll get to hear what we can get to here in a little bit. But maybe someone takes a flyer on him in the first round. But I really hope he comes back, because I want to see the not the training wheels, but I want to see him, draw up some plays for Alex Caravan. He deserves it. Put him in some actions, because it's going to surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely would be cool. I just think, again, last year, trying to remember that feeling. Andre Jackson said, "I want to stay. I plan on staying." And you start to let yourself think, "Oh my goodness, what if Andre Jackson returns for another year, and what that would mean for UConn?" And then it ends up not happening, and you kind of enter the place of worry. That of course turned out to all go all right, which is fine, but I think, we've kind of carved out our stance as player advocates here, and usually as like, this isn't 1995. Like, you don't need to go 20 and 10 before you can declare and be a good enough NBA prospect. And that's kind of where my place came with Caravan. And then, like I said, I really do think he's going to test the waters, no matter what. I think that's, he hasn't announced that officially. I don't know that or anything like that. I just think that's the smart thing to do, to go test the waters, go see if you get invited to the combine, go do some workouts and see what happens. And like you said, I mean, just anything can happen in a draft like this. You got the whole draft thing. You got to just convince one person to like you. Alex Karaban, a very likable basketball player. Like you said, Madigan, the more you watch him, the more there is to like. He's really upped his game defensively as well, I think, just in terms of being a smarter player on that end. I think him being less of a factor on the scoring side maybe has allowed him to put some more effort into there. And but yeah, it'd be sick if he returned. I think it would bring a lot. He'd make a lot of money. He would get his degree. He confirmed that he would be able to get his degree. Dan Hurley has even said, in response to a question about Caravan returning, "I think it's better to be in college than on a two-way." So Hurley said that after the parade on Saturday, which I thought was an interesting window into Hurley's stance on all of this. But yeah, I mean, he'd get a sizable NIL bag from UConn. He's a local guy. So he already had the car dealership. He had a deli. He could probably get some more with Duncan. I know he did some stuff with them. Hey, Gillette. Hey, New England Patriots. Hey, whatever else is in Boston. That really lame burrito place that everyone loves. Come through.
Star Market.
Come through. Alex Caravan could be a very, very valuable NIL style player next year because he's a local guy, well liked. He's been there for 3 years, very visible, a starter. And if he's making that kind of money and has the chance to continue his degree, which is not like a lip service thing, as you guys have discussed, it's something his mother and parents and he himself take very seriously. I think there actually is a lot going in favor of the argument to staying. Usually, when you get into the fan argument of a guy should stay, I usually go, "You're just being really selfish and you want him to stay for your own reasons." But I honestly do feel like there is a lot going for him should he stay.
So I didn't realize because again, Wagon and he had done so much else beyond the box score. He only shot 28% from three in the tournament. He had a real rickety roller coaster of a shooting year. And he has joked about his form. He kind of has that side sling. It looks like a Lonzo Ball abomination type shot, but it goes in. I mean, he's still a plus shooter on his careers. And you saw how, Andre Jackson did enough athletically, defensively to get drafted and have somebody say, "All right, we'll work with your jump shot and try to fix you within the NBA franchise." I think the ultimate question comes down to is some team, like you said, going to fall in love with enough and say, "All right, man, your shot's inconsistent. You got a summer in here with us. We're gonna fix this shot. Here's a late first round, early second round contract." It didn't, Andre Jackson definitely should have gone, but he ended up at a place where like he kind of got buried at the end, and I thought he would play a lot more. But Doc Rivers and Adrian Griffin, whatever. So it all depends on your situation, but again, those are things you don't know ahead of time, unless you get some kind of promise from someone that like real like shit. Celtics could have a second round pick, and if they come knocking and Brad Stevens is sitting down with the Caravan saying like, "Hey, like we have 2 second round picks, we're gonna try to grab you with one, and we're gonna overhaul your shot, and we're gonna help win Banner 20 at that point, because the Celts are gonna win," then. It's hard to say no to that, but I think we're also forgetting that he had some shooting slumps, and I can see a lot of teams, if he's not firing at the combine or even if he gets the invite to the combine, saying like, "All right, like really get that shot down up to like consistently what was his percentages for the year." Let's see, 37, get back up to 40 your junior year with the ball in your hands. You're an automatic first round pick, I think.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point about just the situation, right? Like, he knows his situation at UConn is extremely good. He, you know, anyone who's kind of like moved or switched teams ever in their life or, you know, matriculates from one level to another, you got to like prove yourself again. He would not have to do that next year. And I think the possibility of actually improving his stock in a meaningful way by taking on a different role is something that would be of value, and a value for staying in the college game. A college game that I do think has improved over the last couple of years with NIL and the portal. I think it's allowed people to maximize their situation. Like, people maybe have gone pro in lieu of transferring in the past, or in lieu, you know, just be like, whatever, I'll be a second round pick, then I'll go G League. That's better than sitting out a year in college. So that's one version of it, but I think it's also kept a lot of sophomores and juniors in college basketball, and we've seen that. My personal opinion, because I feel like maybe 3, 4 years ago on podcasts, I'd be saying, you know, quality of college basketball across the board is going down. All through last year's tourney run, saying, "Hey, UConn can win it all because nobody's that good." I think we're seeing a lot of improvement across the board. That'd be so cool if Caravan could end up on the Celtics. I think that'd be a great situation. Maybe they are attracted to him, but we shall see. So with Haas returning, most likely Caravan drawing kind of second round grades here. Klingon and Castle are getting have really risen up the draft boards across the NCAA tournament. Both are getting play as potentially the number one pick. We had Woj on ESPN saying Donovan Klingon legitimate shot at the number one overall pick. The Ringer had Castle at number one in their mock draft. Others have had him at 3, 5, you know, other places in the top 10. Folks, we might be seeing two top 10 UConn draft picks, which would be crazy. How are we feeling about these NBA draft prospects for a sophomore and a freshman, by the way?
I just feel like with Steph Castle, anytime I'm watching an NBA game now, I just am seeing guards, and I just feel like Steph Castle could just be on the court right now. I feel like he's just a plug and play guy. And obviously he has some limits offensively where he was able to kind of get around that just because he was just bigger and faster and just straight up better than a lot of his competition. And that covers up a lot of weaknesses, but he showed a lot of improvement as a shooter. Obviously was an incredible perimeter defender, great job as a rebounder as well. So I feel like between him and Klingon, if I had to pick, and what a luxury that would be, I would probably take Castle with my first pick. But the Klingon number one pick buzz is very real if Woj is saying it, and he's hearing that from probably multiple people if he feels comfortable putting that in the story. So it's really impressive to see his run. And I mean, it shows how dominant Klingon was during this tournament run and how impressive he is as a player. But I feel like it gives me those. It was a 2004 NBA draft. I think it was Okafor and Gordon went 2 and 3, right? So, but behind Dwight Howard. So we could very easily see something like that once again. I feel like that's in the cards. And it's crazy how, you know, at the beginning of the year, it was like both should be lottery picks. And Castle kind of fell when he got hurt. Klingon kind of dropped when he got hurt. And then after non-conference, it was like both will be first round picks. After Big East play ended, both will be top 20 picks. Big East tournament's over, both will be top 15 picks. And now here we are after back-to-back titles. And it's like they might both be top 3 picks. They should be top 10 picks. They may be top 5 picks. And it just shows the level of talent that was on this UConn team this year. And it's not surprising at all to anyone that's watched these two guys play all season long. The NBA talent was just so apparent from basically the get-go once they both got healthy.
Yeah, I mean it's just another feather in the cap of like how sick is this team was this team. There should be there are so many different ways that you can take that of like how sick is this team if you wanted to go the pro route. Okay, well we're gonna have two top five picks in an albeit weak draft, you know, per experts, but it almost and I think and I want to pose this question to you guys. It validates our ball knowing status a little bit, our credentials, because we sat here and were like, when you step outside of our own UConn silo, you have all of these neutral NBA people being like, wow, look at these people. Like it actually helped clarify and crystallize a little bit just how insane this team is when you have like very strictly, I don't watch college, you know, like a Bill Simmons type being like, wow, Castle and Klingon, like these guys, like I'm looking at their tape, they look insane. And it's like, these guys don't give a shit about college. They're not, you know, they don't follow the game or UConn in particular. And they're saying all these things. It offered some perspective of just how special that those two and that team is. I think number one is definitely in the books, depending on how the lottery balls, you know, fall. But we can discuss that, I think, when it happens, because, you know, you look at team fit, I can give you like little bits and pieces. The only thing I'll say, we need to start a summoning circle. Stay the fuck away from Charlotte. Like, please, for the love of God, no Hornets draft UConn players. That's the only requirement I have. Go to Detroit, go to Portland. I don't care where you go. Stay away from Charlotte.
That's going to be tough. They are a team with a high draft pick, and they could do whatever. But one of those problems with being a high draft pick is a bad team might select you, and in some cases might be a really bad franchise. We've seen that with a couple of recent Huskies, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, I think just like Castle, like you said, Madigan, for me, I had that feeling watching him play at UConn. I was like, that's just a future NBA player swinging through, you know, just being like, dang, I hope I make the Final Four. But he actually like put a ton of effort and did that and really led with defense, which is amazing. Just in the way that what he proved over the final run of that season. And then also his ability to finish offensively. That's a very exciting type of player. And if you can get him to get his shot to a consistent place, that's just an extremely dangerous player. I think that's what the Ringer said. Basically, it was just like, you know, if this guy becomes a 3-point shooter, he's very, very dangerous. I don't know, maybe Kyrie-esque.
No, Shea Gilgeous, SGA.
SGA-esque, potentially. So that's awesome. Honestly, equally as awesome, in my opinion, is seeing Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer both prominently featured in the early part of the second round, and even Newton as high as 30th on Kyle Boone at CBS Sports' mock draft. So I think that's super exciting for those guys. They're going to get the combine invite. They're going to get the summer league. They're going to get a shot in the G League. You know, it's not the easiest path, but both of those guys are dogs. They didn't take the easy path to start them at UConn either. And they achieved it. I'm honestly pretty excited for both of their pro prospects just because it'll be, you know, we're rooting for them and they're great players.
Vegas is going to be so sick when you think of, and I hate Vegas for the record, but when you think of Hawkins, probably will get a little bit of time. He may not need it because I mean, he was an absolute dog when he played, but Sonogo for sure, fresh off a 2020 burger earlier. Andre Jackson, Calcaterra, I mean, maybe Nahim Aline if you want to get real funky, see if he gets like an invite somewhere. Then you factor in everyone that you just mentioned. It's going to be UConn Central over there, UConn West, or Stores West, whatever you want to call it, or Stores Slots or something cool. But that just speaks volumes to like the talent infusion that he's given guys who, you know, really didn't really have that on their radar. And we kind of like, you know, laughed when Cam Spencer was like, yeah, I want to get to the NBA. Like, yeah, okay, buddy, you know, go get your golf game ready. And here he is. He's going to get probably drafted. And honestly, I'm not a GM, but like they bring so much to the table that like you have to take a flyer on them. And that's without UConn tinted glasses on, but with the way that everyone in that starting lineup dominated college basketball for various prolonged periods, how do you not take a flyer on a guy like that? Like, I'm looking at some of the drafts here of like, you're seeing Terrence Shannon Jr. at 33. And like this was like the Big Ten monster. It's like, okay, yeah, and Spencer, Caravan, and Newton are like all right around him. So like, you know, like they like we have to accept the fact that like all five of UConn's starting lineup was among like the top 10 players in college this year.
Yeah, and I think we have the Evan Maya, BPR to kind of back that up, right? So it makes sense. And I think with Spencer and Newton, they're just at a spot where they deserve the benefit of the doubt. I think they've kind of proved that they can play at a really elite level. Newton's NBA stock has been crazy to me. I kind of feel like you should have at least been sneaking into the tail end of those like mid-season mock drafts, but if you ask Dan Hurley about the mock drafts, he'll tell you that they don't matter at all. And he's probably right, to be completely honest. It just gives us people like us things to talk about when there's not a lot of basketball going on like there is now. So I could totally see Newton carving out a career in the NBA. And Spencer has shown enough that he may be able to do the same. And I think defensively, they both have question marks, but offensively, we've already seen what they can do in a pro style offense. Like it's very similar. UConn's offense is very similar to what's being run by so many NBA teams right now. So it's not about whether they can hang offensively at that level. I think that's almost a given, frankly. But defensively, off the ball, all that stuff will be an adjustment, and they'll have to kind of learn to kind of deal with that. But they've been winners. They've been able to kind of make those changes and adapt their game for years now. So I don't see why adjusting to Summer League, G League, NBA is going to be any different.
I will say I'm a little bit higher on Newton. I think his just, like really strong scoring ability, that's like the thing where it's like, they in the NBA they want you to at least be really good at something. He's like tall enough and a really good scorer, and then good enough facilitator. So I like that for him. I think it's time to drop my Cam Spencer NBA projection. I think we had to cut it from an earlier podcast for time because of different considerations. But I think Cam Spencer is capable of making it in the NBA for a little while and having a Linsanity style run. Like a 1 month stretch where he has like 5 30-point games and then you don't hear from him again. Or maybe he like Jeremy Lin, like latches on for a little bit, but he's kind of a journeyman back and forth between the G League and some other leagues. That's my prediction for Cam Spencer. I want a Linsanity style run from him. That's my I'm Jonathan Givney, and making my NBA draft prediction, Cam Spencer, NBA ceiling, Linsanity style run. What do you guys think? Can Cam do it?
I don't know. I mean, again, no knock on Cam Spencer, but I remember watching all the Lin stuff unfold, and he athletically like could hang in the NBA. Like he had first step and quickness and a little bit of burst, and it wasn't like athleticism that like held him back. I think it just he just eventually like wasn't that good of an NBA player. But I remember like everyone, he wasn't like some make-a-wish kid being brought out there that just like caught hot. Like he had some like athleticism. So I'm not buying that because I don't think Cam Spencer is necessarily blowing by people in the NBA. But what I am buying is some absurd record that he might get on the court and hit like 10 threes in a game in March of next year when like teams are trying to I see you guys laughing here. I need to keep a straight face. But like when teams are just kind of like tanking and playing the guys, when Adama Sanogo getting his 2020, like holy shit, look at that. Next year there could be like oh my God, Cam Spencer hit 10 threes and just went absolutely bonkers. Or has some crazy efficiency route there. The comparison that I was ready to give, and then I didn't realize how tall he was, and you guys are just gonna absolutely skewer me here, but Joe Ingles is 6'9 and is a knockdown shooter and has been for some time with like honestly like kind of like the Cam Spencer temperament too of like he's gonna fucking talk shit to you the whole time and be kind of nasty about it. But if I can find, I'm gonna dig deep to find like a 6'4", 6'5" type, because also having stood next to him, he's a little taller than 6'4", I would say. So like 6'4", 6'5" type of shooter with, limited athleticism but unlimited craftiness. There's got to be somewhere out there in the league like that.
I have one for you. What about Pat Spencer? That's an NBA player. And, Pat Spencer's probably a little more athletic than Cam. And I don't know exactly how the size works out, but I feel like it's a very similar pedigree. Honestly, I think Cam is more skilled. And I feel like if his brother can make it in the NBA after having limited college basketball experience, I think Cam has the pedigree and the skill set to at least get a cup of coffee at that level as well. And yeah, I don't know about the Jeremy Lin comp, Amon. Jeremy Lin did torch UConn at Gamble Pavilion. I was just thinking about that when that came up. I remember kind of going back and realizing that in
Sick
hindsight. But
call out. That is a
yeah,
sick call out.
so it's totally possible. I think if he's an elite 3-point shooter, right, and teams will always need that at that level, if they're willing to make sacrifices for some of the stuff that they're giving up to have him on their bench, on their roster, I could totally see him carving out a role. And I want the Joe Ingles comp to happen so bad. But yeah, Ingles is a little bit bigger and a little bit more of like a like back you down, like post move type of game. But that's probably the best comp that I can think of off the top of my head, Patrick.
Also, let's not forget this is Cam Spencer we're talking about here. That he had there's a very good chance that like Cam Spencer is the first of his kind of like a smaller, like we said, Ingles type that like very crafty back I mean we saw him put Zach Edey up in the air in the title game. I really truly think he could be someone that could break the mold where a lot of scouts say like, all right, well, yeah, great shooter, but he just probably really needs to be 6'9" or 6'7" or something like that. Someone takes a flyer on him and they're gonna be like, what? It's like, man, why were we concerned about what amounted to be 3 inches? Because like this dude can clearly play.
I was throwing a bunch of comps in the chat. I guess you guys didn't like it as I was just, filing through my
Bait.
hours and hours of NBA research and
All
film
bait.
study that I do. I was thinking Steve Kerr. What about Steve Kerr as a potential comp for Cam Spencer? Something to think about. Potential future coach, as we know, Cam Spencer wants to get into coaching later. But hey, look, I think even if any of these guys, particularly let's say Spencer or Newton, does not catch on in the association, I think they all have a great chance in Europe to just have really long and lucrative careers, which would be exciting. I think Cam might even potentially be a really, really great fit in the European game.
One other just housekeeping note. Don't ever Google 6'4 shooters without putting NBA on there, or else it gets really, really graphic fast. That got really morbid. You had to kind of specify basketball I was searching for.
Yikes.
FBI, if in case you're listening, this was for hoops research, not for anything
Yeah.
nefarious. Good God.
I only search it on Synergy Sports, which obviously I have a subscription for and just watch all the time, breaking down film of the prospects. So I was searching it in there. I wouldn't get anything like that. Any other housekeeping notes, folks, before we call it here? All right. Patrick, go ahead.
Did we want to talk solo ball, Jalen Stewart, a little bit, or just kind of because?
Sure. Yes, I think we can talk about. I think they're all coming back. I will say that. What do you think?
I think they are because there is enough of a glut of minutes that are available that, regardless of transfers, and I think the staff is very, very open with them of saying, like, hey, like you're going to have to fight or you're going to have to coexist. I think they are very specific about like with each player of like, hey, if you want to fight, like stay with us, we're going to try, or like, hey, like we have designs for you. And we talked about it a little bit in the last pod, but like Solo Ball was on his way to being like a standout. Like those Coutinho Mobley, John Ross team comparisons were looking pretty damn good in December when Steph Castle was hurt. We all saw what Jalen Stewart could do towards the end of the year. I, you know, don't blame Hurley at all for shortening his bench and kind of like, you know, keeping Stewart in only really to keep Caravan fresh. I think a whole offseason designing plays in around those two guys' skill set, I'm super excited to see the leaps. I think both are going to be double digit scorers at least next year. One or the other, depending on whoever develops most, potentially up to 15 points a game and looking at all Big East stuff. And yeah, like I was thinking about the prospects of a three-peat and how it really hinged on last year with like, okay, you had NBA level talent out there in Jordan Hawkins and Andre Jackson and Adama Sanogo. And this year we all just talked about the NBA level talent out there. Next year, when you think Caravan, NBA level talent, I'm not ready to give up on Samson Johnson, maybe, if he really takes like a Hassan Diarra type leap. Terrace Reed, potential NBA level talent with his gifts. And then you throw in Jalen Stewart and Solo Ball as like, I can see those guys as like the next NBA level talent type people in 25 and 26, where either they're, if they absolutely blow up and they leave next year, or then they run it back junior year in that kind of Andre Jackson style where it's like the whole, you know, the whole world is their stage at that point and they make billions off of it.
Yeah, I feel like the Solo Ball and Stewart should come back if everything stays the same. I do kind of think that if McNeely and Brea commit, it could make it a little clogged for Stewart at the wing. And maybe that doesn't happen. And I don't think either of them will transfer, but I could see if somehow UConn lands both of those guys through the portal that it could get a little dicey. But I think Solo Ball's a stud. I've just been so impressed with him. He basically came in with Castle being hurt and just was an immediate contributor. And even when he was in the doghouse and really playing probably a lot less than he should have, he was not afraid to come in, look for his shot when games were out of hand, but still trying to get his reps in and get comfortable in the flow of the college game. And Jalen Stewart was just a real impact on both ends as a shot blocker, as a shooter towards the end. He was really impressive in transition too. So I think there's a path for both of them to be really solid contributors. I could totally see one or both of them being all Big East guys this time next year. So hopefully that young core stays together, because I think that group of like Noel, Solo Ball, and Jalen Stewart is really, really special. But it's tough with the transfer portal. Stuff can change so fast, and we'll have to see what happens. But I think, honestly, I would rather keep Ball and Stewart over going out and getting guys that maybe only here for a year or two to try and make a run at title number seven and back to back to back, just because I think the culture and this kind of foundation that Hurley has built and laid will kind of continue to pay dividends year over year if they can keep guys from getting into the portal and going elsewhere.
Yeah, and I think the same goes for Jaden Ross, who could take a similar style leap. And the only other thing I'll say is, like, I know I had said in the Slack that like when Kobe Brea became available, I was just like, want right now, need. I'm walking that back. It's not as a desperate one, because I didn't realize he was only 1 year. He would be a 1 year rental, and I would much rather take a year of Jalen Stewart or Solo Ball or Jaden Ross. Like breaking out and then realizing you have this guy for at least another year after that, than just another rental.
Yeah. I mean, I think to just kind of summarize, I don't think for Ross, Ball, or Stewart, there were any surprises in terms of like what they got playing time wise and all of that. At least nothing too drastic.
I don't know. I think they were a little, I don't know, not disappointed, but I think there was, I don't know, I saw some of the freshmen contributing a lot more, not due to them not being ready, But just like I didn't think UConn would be this like that the first seven would be so good. I thought they'd have to lean on them more. I think that's what they were taken back by. Like, oh my God, those seven dudes in front of me are all potential NBA players.
But
But
like
yeah.
Madigan said, I mean, I think the way that Ball stepped in when Castle was hurt just showed a lot of maturity and showed that he has a lot of trust from the coaching staff. I mean, that was the beginning of his freshman year. And I also just would say, like, we don't really have like strong indications that any of them is leaving. So I think even just bringing up the possibility is a little far-fetched just because it's like, yeah, guys could leave, but we don't really have any indication for. And like I'm saying, again, it's not like someone was promised starters minutes and didn't get that. You know, like I don't think there was anything drastic in terms of role. And, you know, like why leave the rocket ship? You know, not to, sorry to sound like a Silicon Valley guy, but it's like, if you're a freshman on this UConn team, even if you're Jaden Ross, you know, you didn't play very much, and not to, I don't know anything about his exact situation. But why would you leave? Why would you leave the situation? You have the opportunity to grow and develop among a coaching staff that has proven to be so great at development, run such an advanced offense, improve people's pro prospects, put people in good situations to succeed, really cares about basketball. The school, the league cares about basketball. It's like all a really good situation for those guys. Someone like Ross, you know, he's from the area. I think he's from the DMV, but did high school in New York. I think that's it. Because he was AAU teammates with Ball. But I just, you know, I really would caution anyone from just like making up the possibility that someone stays and even to post stuff like that. It's like, why make up something that's just like not super based in anything? Freshmen don't play all the time. You know, I know the situation we're in, but again, these were not, this was not a, you know, what was that guy on Villanova who everyone got so mad about, the five star who like didn't play very much? I'm forgetting his name right now. It doesn't matter. This isn't one of those situations. So I don't think any of them got anything to, I think all of them are quite satisfied with their UConn experience, winning a championship, doing a parade their first year, and getting to build on that. That would be my kind of thought there. So the team is good, folks. The recruiting is going well. The Fast Break podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Be sure to check it out. Rate, review. We will be doing this more often. We're excited. We're amped. Thank you all for listening.